Blog Talk Radio.
Near Civil War history, my heart could they be? She was standing in fiction, stretched high on bare feet. Love in the library, quiet and cool. Love in the library, there are no rules. Surrounded by stories surreal and sublime, I fell in love in the library once upon a time.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Web Weaver Books, where our favorite authors read their books for you, and clothing is 100% optional. I'm your host, CK Webb. I am so excited to get today's guest onto the show, you guys. I'm pulling in his book up right now. If you guys would, I would love for you guys to type in William D. I want to make sure I say this right so I maybe won't bore share, I think, but it's V-O-R. C-H-E-R-T. You guys check that out, and we are going to, and I'm typing it in right now, like trying to make you guys think I'm not. All right, so like I have so many things pulled up on our guest today. I've got 3 pages with books on them, well, and 1 with a movie, and the reason I have it pulled up is because I had no idea that this was the same person, and I just realized that this is the same person who had something to do with one of my favorite movies. So I'm excited, you guys. Pull it up. We're going to talk about How I Became My Father, a Drunk. Hopefully, Bill is planning to read for us. I hope. If not, we're definitely going to have a great conversation. So you guys get that book pulled up real quick. And let me go ahead and pull a guest onto the show. Bill, are you there?
Yes. How are you, CK?
I am
here.
So good. I'm so glad to have you on the show. I hope everything's going well.
I feel privileged to be with you.
I just found out something, you know, I usually tell my guests that I stalk every single one of them, and I do, and I'm a very good stalker. I stalk you guys before you come on the show, so I know, you know, some things about you, and I was late doing my stalking, so I'm stalking you right now, and I just come, and I was like, wait a minute, my name is Bill, wait a minute, there was a movie, it's one of my favorite movies, and it's called My Name is Bill, so I go doing a little research, and lo and behold, you're the same Bill who wrote My Name is Bill. That's one of my favorite movies.
My name is Bill W. with James Woods and James Garner. Yeah.
Love it. I can't believe it. So you guys get the honor of being able to hear from this author. But I'm over here all starstruck now, acting just ridiculous because I do love this movie. And there are other reasons why I love it, not simply because it's great, but there's also other reasons why. But we'll get into all that. So, Bill, if you would, for the readers and listeners out there, tell us a little bit about you and how you got started writing.
Well, I started as a young newspaper reporter in New York City, real big break. And I was actually going to St. John's University at the time, and I broke a big story. And before you know it, the city editor said I had a nose for news, and I was a police reporter. And then I started, they gave me a break and let me write some of my own stories that I covered, and they found that I could write, and before I know it, I was a rewrite man, and then and by the time I was 22, I was a byline feature writer for the largest evening newspaper in the world.
Wow.
I say that because that's true, but by the time I was 25, I was the obituary editor because I got fired 5 times because of my drinking.
Oh, no, you're the guy from Closer. Oh, my gosh, really? Things do take dramatic turns in life, do they not sometimes, Bill?
They really do. So I left, I became a magazine writer, and then I started writing for radio shows, and so I've had a pretty nice career before I drank myself completely out of the media business, you know?
Right. Well, yeah. Now that's a good bit of what we're going to be talking about. I hope you're planning to read. I didn't get a chance to ask you, so no pressure there or anything, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
And that's kind of what I want to get into. I definitely would like for you to kind of lay out How I Became My Father, a Drunk. That's the book that we're looking at. So tell me what readers are going to find in this story and you know, what kind of journey are they going on with this one?
Well, I should say I had never had an intention of writing this story at all. But I was speaking one day in West Palm Beach and at a big convention, And there were a lot of people in the audience that had my color hair, which happens to be slightly gray at this point. And so I started talking about my dad and my relationship with him, and how bad it was at one point, and then how good it got. And after the session, the chairman came over to me and asked me if I ever thought writing a book about it. And I said, why would I want to dig up all of that painful stuff anymore, you know? And he said, because
right.
it could help people. He said, it could help sure. because he said, this is a family disease and it could really help a lot of people. Well, I know it's a family sure. disease. I knew that for a long time.
Right.
And so that's what planted the seed. And then I talked to my wife about it, and she thought,
that guy's amazing.
I
just want to say that whoever that guy is giving you that little bit of guidance, I'd send him Christmas cards every year because he was on his game. He was right.
But you can imagine that I had a lot of trepidation.
Yeah, I've been like, there's no freaking way I'm writing that. I'm not telling everybody that. Well, I packed those boxes up and put them way back in the back of my memory storehouse, and I'm going to leave them taped up.
That's exactly what, for a while. But as I began to think about it, it's amazing the things that you can remember, you know.
I know.
I can't remember where I was yesterday, but I can remember where I was 40 years ago.
I can tell you where I was 15
years ago.
I know. I tell people that all the time. Look, you think that when, and I was a blackout drinker, Bill. I'm going to go ahead and tell you my date, July 12th, 2007. It's another reason why I was excited to have you on the show. I don't get an opportunity to talk about that very often. It doesn't come up, but when I get the opportunity, I am very, very open with it. And they say, I thought anonymous meant you don't know. You know, I mean, that's what it means when you go in there, when you're scared and you don't want anybody to know. But after you are to a place of acceptance and you want to continue to battle your disease, then you want people to know because that keeps you sober. Well, it kept me sober mm-hmm. for a minute anyways. And then I was like, okay, well, if I talk about this a little bit, maybe I won't go and drink. You know, that works for a little while. But then it gets to, hey, I have to deal with these things now, not just talk about those things. So,
yeah, that's exactly the way I feel, too. And in fact, that's how I carry the message today through the things that I write, mm-hmm. through my movies and through my books. Because I owe a great debt. I owe a great, great debt to my sobriety and how I got it into a 12-step program. And so I'm very, very deeply, deeply grateful. And this is how I repay. And
I love the pay it forward thing. You know, I mean, I don't. Mm-hmm. I did have a group here for a while. I'm in a pretty small town. So I couldn't get people with a lot of consistency coming to the group. Mostly I was just getting court order rejects, you know, people that are just like, oh, okay, just go take four classes or whatever. And it just, you know, it was very disheartening for a while. It's like, you know, they could be helping these people and they're not. And I'm trying to help these people. But at the end of the day, I already know from experience that that absolutely will be met with, you know, a hand to the face or a steel wall until that person's ready to deal with what they're ready to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
it didn't matter mm-hmm. how much I wanted it for everybody else. They had to want it for themselves. And so,
right.
you know, at a point I went, you know what, we need to walk away from this and you guys decide, you know, what you want to do, but I'm going to go over here and stay sober. And that's what I've done.
that's what I did too.
Right.
Yeah,
that's what I did.
Yeah,
I kind of separated myself and said, okay, well, I'm going to go over here and stay sober, and you guys do that, and then I'm just going to write about it, you know, what you guys do.
As a matter of fact, what I did is I thought I was crazy. You know, to me, being nuts explained why I was doing all the stuff I was doing and that I didn't want to do and doing it over and over again. So I went to a psychiatrist, and in 10 minutes or less, he said to me he thought I was an alcoholic. I wanted to punch him in the mouth, you know. Because I wanted to be crazy. Of course, if you're crazy, you can drink.
Crazy,
if you're an alcoholic,
you're
supposed to stop.
People feel sorry for you when you're crazy because alcoholism, that's not a disease. You're just a drunk. I completely
all.
Know where you're coming from. I completely
and,
do.
And from my religious upbringing,
I got angry.
You know. Yeah.
I was kind of the opposite of you, Bill. I was like, don't tell me I'm crazy. I'm just drunk. You may need medication. And I was like, I'm not taking medication for bipolar. I've only been sober for a month. What the hell's the matter with you people? I don't even know if my brain works right yet. And I just absolutely wouldn't do it. Now, it's several years later, I go, maybe sometimes I got a little issue here or there. But things that I could not face, would not face right then, and took offense to it at the time. And now I see where they're coming from because, you know, it is insane. So I guess that's the easiest way for people to equate it. You know, that person's insane.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're not people. They're not. There's some things that are going on there, and they're usually things that are attributed to some type of childhood trauma or hereditary. Because yes. It is in families. It's family disease, people.
It sure is.
Well, I was so excited. I pulled this up, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, When Love Is Not Enough. This is Barry Pepper and Winona Ryder. This is a great movie. This is yours, too. This is your book.
Yeah, I wrote that, too. Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's
Winona wanted to really make this movie because she read the book. She said she read it twice, and she just loved the book. And she thought after reading the book and then doing the movie, it could help her personally with some of her own problems. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience on the set. And Barry Pepper is not just a great actor, he's a great guy.
Oh, he's
really
incredible.
Put his heart into it. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet he did.
I love that movie.
Those are two really dedicated actors. And when I saw them together, I was like, that might work out. And it is a wonderful, wonderful movie. It's a great book. But the Bill W. thing just blew my mind. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This is the guy that wrote My Name Is Bill W. I love that movie.
Thank you.
I've seen it so many times. It is so good. James Woods is amazing in that movie.
Isn't he? And so is
James Garner. He's amazing in it. I mean, they're just amazing in it. And they make you have hope. That movie gave me hope. I said, okay. All right. Bill had it bad. I mean, Bill was doing some bad things, but Bill managed to pick his life up. So if Bill can do it, I can do it.
Right.
And that's where a lot of my jumping off places were. You know, look,
if this person
can get this far down, I can get this far up. And so that's what I did. So your book actually did help somebody. And I know it helped a bunch of other people because I wasn't the only one running around saying, I love this movie. This movie's changed my life. That movie actually did change my life. So thank you, Bill. I really do appreciate it.
You're a doll. Thank you, sweetheart. I appreciate it.
I didn't think I'd ever get the opportunity to say to the person who wrote that movie, thank you. Thank you. Wow, that's incredible. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that you had the courage to do that. I really am. And it's
been a
cornerstone for so many 12-step programs. That is one, when you go into the Alcoholics Anonymous book, a book that I highly recommend to people, even if you're not battling alcohol addiction, if you know somebody who is, I highly recommend that you read the stories that are in that book. You will have a better and new understanding of what it is like to be in the shoes of an alcoholic and to know how your mind works and how that person's mind works and how hard life can be. And we do it to ourselves, but, there's things that have to be dealt with. But I recommend that book to anybody. Read the stories in there if you want to understand what's going on with somebody that you know or somebody in your family or maybe even yourself.
I wrote a book along the same lines called A Thousand Years of Sobriety.
Oh, wow. I did see that one, and I wasn't sure if you wanted to jump into it, but it does 20 people times 50 years. So tell me about that one a little bit.
Well, that's, again, stories of people staying sober more than 50 years and still being active and carrying the message to other people.
Wow.
So it's amazing people from all over the world.
Right.
It's
absolutely
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, because I can remember being in meetings and see 25, 30 years and just being in awe of those people. Just really in awe. Just being so wow. These people are, they're getting it together and using a lot of them as inspiration. You know, to be able to do that because it has to be a hard deal. It has to be a hard deal to stay sober that long. I mean, you're going to have to put that effort in. But they were getting sober in a time where it was a real taboo. A real taboo or something like that. And it was a lot more difficult, I think, for people in your age group. And those were the people that I was looking up to. I felt like they had to struggle even more than we do now. People are a little bit more accepting nowadays. A little bit. Not a whole lot.
Not much.
But a little bit more accepting.
Much.
More, but a little bit more than they were. I think people are starting to, take a look at it and go, okay, well, maybe there's something to this, but it's taken so long, and I know that people around your age had a really hard time at it.
Yeah. Those people they're still my heroes, those people. They really are.
Absolutely, they had it. Yeah, I mean, they really went in there and look, I'm going to do this, and I don't care what, the outside says. This has got to be about what's going on the inside right here with me. So,
By the way, since you like my movies, I've already got interest from some producers in my new book, turning that into a movie.
Ooh, amazing.
Wouldn't that be great?
Amazing. That would be so good. You know what would be even better than that? If you signed that option for film and then came back on the show to talk to us about it, then it would be.
Oh, I'd love to.
Yes, that's how you secure a show date.
Well, when
that's
that happens, and hopefully it will, I'll call you. Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got my number. So my email, call me on the cell. I love that. I hate email tag. I love to talk on the phone and tell somebody, hey, awesome.
Terrific.
So, well, I don't know if you were planning to read. Were you planning to read today, Bill?
If you want me to, yeah, sure, I'd love to. Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd love to do a little reading for everybody there. You know, 5 or 10 minutes, that'd be great, of the book, so everybody kind of gets to wet their whistle, and we tease them up.
Well, how about
they just
maybe,
can't not buy the book.
About just a couple of pages would be at. Would that be all right?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Okay, because this comes from near the middle of the book. And
okay.
I think it says a whole lot about my relationship with my father at that time. By the way, you do know from reading the book that my father did get sober, and we had a great relationship after that. It was wonderful, wonderful.
I bet. I can't imagine that what that would be like. My dad's still a drinker, so we have days where we can't be around each other. I accept it, you know, because he's just not ready, you know, but... you know, it has made it where we don't hang out as much. We can't. I just can't be around drunk people. I'm just not. It's not really my thing at all. I don't.
Well,
know,
I understand.
So
I understand because I had days. I had days where I wanted to punch him out, and he wanted to punch me out.
Oh gosh, yeah. There'll be days when I'll light him up. I mean, I'm a sailor, Bill. Let's just keep it real. I can drop an F-bomb like it's going out of style. Really. And there's been days where I have just lit him up like a firecracker. You know what is wrong with you? You're out of your mind. Don't sit here and tell me I don't understand. And then I have to pull back on that, because we already know that it doesn't matter if I browbeat him into it, that's not going to work. He has to come to it himself. So I stay away when I know that it's times when he's going to be really, really drinking, you know, and I know what times to call when he's not going to be. And you know, it works for what it is, and I'm really hoping one of these days, but, you know, I'm holding out hope, Bill. I'm holding out hope.
All right, so, well, this is... let's see, what is this? This is two pages. I'll read this first, all right?
Great.
You want me to start now?
Sure.
Okay. All right. All right. What can you do when the pressure gets so great you really need a few drinks just to relax? You have to do what comes naturally. But why did it almost always lead to trouble? And every time I would ask God for help, why would he always turn me down while taking good care of everyone else? What could you do when the whole world seems to be stacked against you? Perhaps that's why I was on my way to Mucci's Bar and Grill that morning, intending to see my father. This way I could thank him for being such a great role model when I was growing up. I would kiss him on the cheek and express my gratitude for showing me how to wreck a loving family and a promising career. Maybe I would pat him on the back for always being there when I needed to talk over a problem or get some direction. As I drove down to my favorite watering hole, I found myself blaming everyone but myself for the situation I was in. I had a wife whom I felt didn't love me anymore, a city editor who refused to understand my problems, a father who was an uncaring drunk, and a God who wanted no part of me. My self-pity was growing exponentially, my blame game was in high gear, and my resentments were popping out of my eyeballs. Yes, it was everybody else's fault, especially my father's. Sure enough, when I pulled the curb on South Street and walked into the Smoky Saloon, he was standing there bellied up to the bar as usual. He was on his break after the first edition had gone to press, the edition that should have carried my story about Tommy Manville and his stupid, meaningless, almost laughable 13th marriage. The moment my dad saw me, he knew there was something terribly wrong. My clothes were wrinkled, my eyes were bloodshot, and I needed a shave. Even before he said hello, he looked at me with a frown and asked, "What's wrong? You look like hell." I nodded to Frank Mucci, the owner who was tending bar. He knew my drinking habits as well as he knew my father's. He poured me a double shot of rye and a beer chaser. As I picked up the shot glass, my father grabbed my arm and said, "I asked you what's wrong." "I screwed up," I responded rather sharply. "I missed an assignment and Mahal wanted to fire me. He demoted me instead." Then I downed a shot and the beer. Maybe he's just trying to teach you a lesson, my father said. From what I hear, things aren't going well on the home front either. If I were you, I'd get back in my car and head for home. Drinking's not going to solve anything. Believe me, I know. Maybe I took his remarks the wrong way because it was like someone just threw a bucket of hot water in my face. I saw red. That's when I remember suddenly losing control. Who the hell are you to be giving me advice? I said loud enough for everyone to hear. I should go home. What about you? You think you're some kind of great role model? That's enough, was my father's angry reply. Why? Aren't you proud of the way I followed in your footsteps? I'm a drunk just like you, and doing what drunks do, screw up. I said that's enough, he insisted. Enough, I responded. Who says it's enough? Come on, let's have another drink. It's never enough, is it? And that's one scene, by the way, I remember very, very well.
Wow, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, I bet that was, woo, that's a snapshot in time. I can how that goes when you got one who's still resentful and the other one who's, you know, kind of trying to accept. And, yeah, I bet it's a difficult deal. You know, I got to say, I know that this had to be incredibly hard for you to write, but what wonderful things have come from you writing How I Became My Father a Drunk?
What wonderful things? Well, it brought back, in addition to the painful memories, it brought back a lot of wonderful memories. It really did. Mm-hmm. It brought me, what's that?
Isn't it odd how we forget the good stuff and then we remember all the really bad stuff until we start to, you know, kind of reflect or whatever. I had a really good memory when it came to, you know, the things that I had done, but there were some things that, you know, when there were good times, I think I shut those things off. I think it was easier for me to cope with what I was going through without having those good times. So a lot of those I had forgotten until I got sober and I went, gosh, you know, it wasn't so bad. It really wasn't.
Yeah. Let's see, there's one other thing that I if you like me to just do a little bit more reading.
Oh yeah, that would be great. Oh, absolutely,
okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is when it began to get really bad. Okay. Sometimes when I was drinking late in the city and the smelly, low-class bar I was in either closed or threw me out, I'd manage to talk a cabbie into driving me home. I would give him the wrong address and then pretend I had to go into the house to get some cash. I'd stagger to a side door, then sneak quietly through several backyards and find some bushes to hide under. I'd lay there, sucking on the rest of a pint for an hour or so until I felt the cabbie had gone. It was a very shabby and shameful thing to do. One night I dozed off under a bush and woke up with ants crawling all over my face. That Christmas I had been on a drunk and in blackouts for several days. I never bought a tree for my family. I think it was either Christmas Eve or the night before when I was staggering home and spotted this beautifully decorated, well-lit Christmas tree in the foyer of an apartment building that had no doorman. So I staggered in, unplugged the tree, and dragged it out with me. What terrible things we drunks do. I'm not sure why I never managed to get that tree all the way home. Something tells me I might have seen a police car passing by and threw it over a fence so I wouldn't get myself into more trouble. Fortunately, my mother-in-law had bought a very nice tree for her house, which my wife and the children helped to decorate. It was the first week of April of 1962. I awoke with a start in another $2-a-night flea-bag hotel room that stunk of urine and stale beer. My clothes were terribly wrinkled, and I smelled almost as bad as the room. My growth of beard seemed to be stuck to the mattress from having slobbered in my sleep. I remember staggering into the filthy bathroom and looking into a small mirror. What I saw staring back disgusted me. I came out and sat on the edge of the bed. My mind wouldn't stop. It kept reeling off every single calamity in my life and all the reasons I shouldn't even be around anymore. My wife and family were still living in a basement. No one would hire me. I had bad checks. My bad checks were bouncing all over New York. I was $67,000 in debt to banks, finance companies, and loan sharks. I was convinced the FBI would be arresting me at any moment for not having filed my income tax for the last 7 years. I hated myself, and I was in complete despair over every bad thing I had ever done and all the people I had harmed. At the age of 27, my life was over. There was absolutely no reason for going on. I was absolutely certain that God hated me and had a special place reserved for me in hell. As tears of self-pity once again flowed down my face, I stood up and walked to the window. I opened it and crawled out on the window ledge. I think it was the 8th floor facing an air shaft. There were cables and telephone lines crisscrossing all the way down to the bottom. I sat there and waited for the courage to jump. That was my bottom, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that your jumping off place? It sounds pretty far down there.
Yeah, pretty far down.
I was like, whoa, yeah, that's not good. Wow.
But then I just continued
right.
And said that suicide, as they say, is more often than not a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
That's what my mother used to tell me when I was growing up. I can remember her saying that, you know. And I was one of those kind of people that's like, I never thought, you know, hey, I'm going to kill myself, but I probably was capable of putting hands on somebody else. I probably have more than once.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has a little different brain chemistry going on there when you add that poison. So I was a blackout drinker probably from almost the beginning. I just didn't realize that's what it was, you know. I'd just be like, oh, I had a great time. I can't remember anything. I wasn't having a great time, you guys. I wasn't having a great time. So, and that started to pile up, and eventually it started to catch up. And then I go in the Navy, and, of course, well, I mean, I'm just going to be real with you. Everybody drinks. Not everybody, but almost everybody. And if you don't, you're bored, and you don't have any friends. So I just kept on going through it. I'm not saying anything bad about the Navy, you guys. I'm not, you know, I love the Navy, but CAC level 3 is about all they offer, and that's like taboo, so nobody talks about it. So it's not something that's addressed very often in the Navy either. I want to say before, you know, I let you even get close to getting out of here, that whatever thing that you have coming up, you know, I mean, Hollywood comes in Austin again, or, you know, you get ready to drop another book, or you have some great tour coming up or whatever, just shoot me an email or call me. I'd love to get you back on the show, Bill.
Absolutely.
All right. Before I let you get out of here, if you would, for the readers and listeners, if you have any social media sites where they can get to know you, maybe Facebook or Twitter, we'd love to have those. If you have a website address, please give them that and tell them where they can pick up a copy of How I Became My Father, a drop.
Well, my website is simply williamborchert.com. William, B-O-R-C-H-E-R-T, williamborchert.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they can get the book through my website or from Amazon.com.
Very cool. And I did want to make mention to you guys that this is a Story Merchant book, and y'all know that we've had a couple other books on the show. I'm really hoping to add them, but just a really great book, and I know exactly what's going on here. As soon as I see it, I was like, oh, okay, I knew exactly what's happening. I know exactly what's happening here. You guys, you not only have books to check out from Bill, but you also have movies to check out as well. So go look at his IMDb page. Go check those out. If you haven't seen those movies, oh, my gosh, I highly recommend either one of them to you. You don't have to be an alcoholic to watch that movie and love that movie. It is phenomenal. It really is. And the two Jameses are great, and I've always said that. And I'm going to continue to say it, and it just happens to be that this guy on the phone is the one that wrote that. I can't believe it. I'm blown away. Anyways, well, I have really enjoyed you, Bill. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for
appreciate it,
spreading the word,
CK, really
sharing
do.
The message. Spreading the word, sharing
I really,
the message. It's really brave of you. It's very brave of you.
Okay, and then I look forward to talking with you in the future.
Yes, me too. I'll be waiting for an email or a phone call. I'm excited.
Thank you, CK. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill. You have a great day, okay?
Yeah.
Wow, you guys. Wow, right? Oh, see, you know what? Sometimes, yeah, the world, this is the world. This is my little miracle for the day. And as Cal Kinane would say, this is the world's way of showing me that, hey, you're still in there. Everything's still good. To get a little bonus this morning, because that was really exciting for me. This is one of my favorite movies, and it's a very, very, very good movie. It has some great actors in it, and it's very well written, and I'm blown away, and I'm very impressed. So a huge, huge thank you to William G. Burchard for coming on. Thanks so much, Bill. How I Became My Father Drunk. If you guys will pull that book up on Amazon and click on his name. He has a pretty updated author's page on Amazon, and there are other books that are there, 50 Quiet Miracles That Changed Lives. I imagine this is one that I'm going to want to hit up, 1,000 Years of Sobriety, and this goes to what I was telling you guys about the wonderful stories that are included in the Alcoholics Anonymous book. These are going to be a good many of what I was referring to, and I think, you know, I wholly believe that it's very important. Even if you're not suffering from the disease of alcoholism, or if you know somebody who does, I just think it's wholly important for us to have an awareness and for us to know what's going on in the world around us. And this is part of it, and this is something that may possibly help you understand somebody else that maybe you didn't understand before. So definitely check them out. How I Became My Father and Drunk is the book. The author is William G. Burchard. And if you've already read the book, I would love to hear what you thought. And I know Bill would love to hear it as well. Shoot me an email, kweb73@gmail.com, and let us know what you think. That's it for me today, you guys. This has been a phenomenal show. I'm so excited to have had this author on here. I'm so blown away by it. I really am. And I hope that you guys will get out there and check out the books. Get entertained and educated at the same time. And listen, if you're out there and you're battling with alcoholism and you're battling with addiction, there is somebody in your circle somewhere who is willing to help you, and you just need to reach out. Don't think that you don't have anybody. That's not true. You do. There's somebody there. So please, 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 when you get to that jumping off place, don't jump. Just back up. And let's just start over fresh. And anybody out there who's been, I don't even need to be your friend. You know, we don't have to be friends. It's not about that. It's about the camaraderie. We don't have to be buddies, and we never have to talk about it. But if you get to a place where you don't think you matter anymore and that God could not love you, you call me, 662-574-8502. Call me. I don't care if it's 4 o'clock in the morning, you call me. And if I'm close, I'll come there. And that's the beauty of it. And if you guys are out there and you think that you don't have anybody, I'm here to tell you, you have never been more wrong in your life. Go find a meeting. Go talk to some people and go realize that those people in those meetings are people just like you. And it will get easier. It's going to get harder first, but it will get easier. Do not give up. You matter. All right. Thanks so much again, you guys, for coming on the show. Thanks again to Bill Borchert. You guys go check out the book, How I Became My Father Drunk. And, you know, let's educate ourselves. Let's make sure that we know what's going on in our own lives and educate ourselves so that we can extend that out into the community, that our children are aware of it, and we can tackle this. And we could beat this, you know, but we have to be honest about it first. So try to help people. Don't look at somebody and think you know something about them simply because they drink or because they use drugs, because you know nothing about that person, I guarantee it. And I have met people on the streets who were alcoholics, who were drug addicts, and they also used to be bankers. Yes, and I actually took notes from the guy because I was blown away by it. And we are all right there, just a series of unfortunate events away from being somebody else, and maybe somebody that we don't like. So grab a hold of something. Grab onto somebody. Grab onto something, and hang on tight. Somebody cares. So that is it for me, you guys. Just a huge thank you. Thank you so much, Bill, for coming on the show. What an amazing show. And I did want to let you guys know that we are going to be on tomorrow. I'm so excited to get Kathleen on tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be our 5 p.m. Central slot. So I hope you guys will tune in with me. Be early. Be there right at 5 because she has a 25-minute reading scheduled for you guys. I'm so excited. I don't have to do it myself because it's an absolutely amazing book. So, guys, tune in with me tomorrow at 5 p.m. In the meantime, I am CK Webb. Thanking you guys for stopping into Web Weaver Books, where our favorite authors read their books for you. And clothing, yep, it's 100% optional. All you naked people out there.
Near Civil War history, my heart could they be? She was standing in fiction, stretched high on bare feet. Love in the library, quiet and cool. Love in the library, there are no rules. Surrounded by stories, surreal and sublime, I fell in.